ABC Radio Australia.
In just 6 days' time, on the 1st of November, the South Pacific cyclone season is typically meant to start. And so for this Talanoa Tuesday today, I thought we could talk about the weather and traditional weather knowledge, because of generations, communities in the Pacific have observed their local environment, the animals, the plants, as an early warning weather system, which allows them to build coping strategies for extreme weather and climate events. And that knowledge continues to be applied today. Now, Siosina Mele Lui, a climate traditional knowledge officer who's based at SPREP, joins me this morning to chat all about this. Talofalava.
Good morning, and Talofalava, Jordan.
Lovely to have you on the show. Siosina Mele, I wanted to find out what exactly are some of these traditional Pacific weather warning systems that are used around the region?
There's quite a lot of traditional knowledge around weather and climate warnings. Each island, each community have their own. But most communities, they have quite and are still using quite a lot of the traditional knowledge around slow onset events or a lot of weather knowledge. So these are knowledge around droughts, flooding, cyclones. So a lot of the events that they see on a daily basis, most of the communities are still using knowledge pertaining to those events.
And that knowledge about slow onset weather systems like drought, are those things like patterns that people are looking out for?
Sorry, can you repeat?
That traditional knowledge around the slow onset weather systems that you were just mentioning, like drought, what exactly are those, that traditional knowledge? Is it things like patterns that communities are always looking out for and are able to react to?
Yes, some of the knowledge, usually it's not just one, it's a combination of two. Sometimes it's flowering plants or animal behavior that they often, that's out of season. So there's the normal behavior or patterns, and then there is a warning side. So through many observations and stories that have been shared, they're able to differentiate between normal behavior and the warning behavior. And there's also a lot of knowledge around quick onset, not just the slow onset, but quick onset events.
And what would be sort of a specific example of that? Is there a particular flowering plant that perhaps you're able to watch out for and that if you see it change, you know what's going to happen?
Yeah. So for droughts in some parts of the Solomon Islands, and it's the same in Vanuatu, there's a particular plant that when it flowers around April, between April and May. So this is towards the end of the wet season, going into dry season. When they see this particular plant flowering, then they know that there will be they'll be expecting prolonged dry weather conditions. So that is the knowledge. You already had the warning 2 months prior to, or even a few weeks prior to the start of the dry season.
So there's sort of plenty of time for communities and people, if they're recognizing and using that traditional knowledge, to prepare for what's to come.
Yeah, that's correct. Knowledge differs depending on the animal or plant that they're observing. There are different time scales in between when they see the warning and when they're expected to experience the event.
I was just going to say, and what about heading into the cyclone season? What is some of that traditional knowledge that communities have in terms of expecting perhaps cyclones passing through the region?
So a lot of the for cyclones, and this is common from Western Pacific to Central Pacific, through from Vanuatu, Solomon Islands, all the way to Samoa. And Niue, we have traditional indicators like the turtles. This is very common in Solomon Islands and Vanuatu, where when communities observing turtles nesting higher up in the sand dunes, they know that it's going to be a very active wet season, and that includes cyclones. So there is, usually for turtles, they start nesting around August, September. So this is well in advance of the wet season. Before we even start, we have a 2-month lead, if you can use that term.
Yeah.
And some, it's the heavy fruiting of plants, a fruiting and flowering of plants. We have a heavy fruiting of mangoes, which is also one of the indicators for cyclones. Others, it's the prolonged seasonality or availability. So when a certain fruit tree is still producing fruit well beyond the expected time frame. These are some of the localized knowledge that is used by different communities to give them that hint that there will be cyclones.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I love the indications from the turtles based on where they're sort of burrowing into the sand on the dunes. Mm. With this particular cyclone, like, are you keeping across these all the time with this cyclone season? Have you been tracking turtles, for example, to know sort of what their warning is?
We've been working, so at SPREP and through the COSPAC project, we've been working mainly with National Met Services, and they in turn work with their conservation offices in country. Now, one of the difficulties that we find in verifying some of this knowledge, as you may well know, that a lot of the turtles are nesting, but some of them are nesting in remote islands or beaches where we can't see. So we try to set up monitoring stations around the region, but that work is still ongoing, and often we it's a hit or miss sometimes depending on where the turtles are nesting and whether we have observers around there at the time. But we are trying to verify as we work through each season.
And so what is the level of trust between National Meteorological Services and traditional weather knowledge systems? Obviously, it sounds like you're working together, but is there a level of trust that still needs to be built to help each other move through and understand different weather systems?
Yeah, you're correct in saying that it's there's a level of trust that needs to be built. I think with the science, because the instrumentation and how we look at weather and climate is very straightforward, whereas traditional knowledge, because it's been passed down and often the verification needs to be done before we even start using it. So through this project, trust has been built, but also a common understanding that there is value in these two knowledge systems. A lot of communities in remote islands are still relying and using their traditional knowledge. We've had a lot of consultations where communities have mentioned that when communications are cut off or when they're cut off from receiving warnings, they rely or they go back to what they know of and understand of their traditional knowledge. So trust is, we're getting there. This is a start, but there is a lot of work that still needs to be done.
And with the changing weather systems in the face of climate change, what are you learning, I guess, between that collaboration between traditional knowledge, but also, I guess, the more modern system of meteorological services and understanding how those weather patterns are changing?
Yeah, it's been fascinating working in this space because once you start unpacking the traditional indicators and the knowledge that our communities are still using, you start to see that the stories, the narratives itself has long since recorded the changes in our environment. The traditional knowledge that we rely on is based on animals and plant behavior, and they're the first ones to actually respond to a changing weather and climate. So the stories, when our traditional knowledge stories evolve or change, that is a response to the changing weather. So our traditional knowledge is current; it's constantly changing and evolving in response to the changing climate and what we're experiencing now. So there is a lot of, you can see that in our traditional knowledge if we start unpacking our stories.
And with that sort of evolution of understanding both traditional knowledge and combining it with that modern science as well, how do you ensure that the traditional knowledge isn't sort of lost, you know, as there is that rise in modern understandings of weather as well?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think the work that we've done so far has highlighted that in the communities, they've also come to realize that they've lost quite a lot of their own traditional knowledge, and that a lot of information is missing. And with the science, it's National Met Services and communities are now seeing that one enhances the other. There's work that's ongoing where we are starting to integrate some of the traditional knowledge examples within the National Met Services warnings and bulletins. So one is validating and enhancing the reach, making sure that people understand. So the two can coexist. And as people find out more about what they've already lost, there's now this urgency to start collecting and learning more about the traditional knowledge.
Siyasina Mele, sorry to interrupt. We are just coming up to the top of the clock, but it's been absolutely amazing to chat to you about all this climate traditional knowledge. Thank you so very much for joining me here on Pacific Beat. Siyasina Mele Louis there, Climate Traditional Knowledge Officer, speaking to me.